welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for this hour of mystery. Later on, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from 1959. But first, a broadcast of the fat man called the Crooked Horse, first heard on ABC on September 9th, 1946.
Weight 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The fat man.
The American Broadcasting Company brings you the adventures of Dashiell Hammett's fascinating and exciting character, the Fat Man, a fast-moving criminologist who tips the scales at 237 pounds. Tonight's adventure, the Crooked Horse. And now, here is the Fat Man.
You know, if a young man told me he wanted to be a detective and asked my advice, I think the most important thing I could tell him would be this. The life of a real detective isn't made up of silk dressing gowns, briar pipes, and intricate clues any more than the life of a real soldier is made up of pretty uniforms, parades, and bugle calls. They're both tough, hard businesses. And no matter what the sweetness and light boys say, it just isn't a fact that every criminal has a yellow streak down his back any more than it was true that every enemy soldier was a coward at heart. Sure, there are yellow crooks, but not all of them, because it stands to reason that a job of violence simply won't appeal to a man who scares easily. And believe me, whether you like it or not, this is a more mighty important thing to know when you're dealing with a murderer. The girl wasn't beautiful, but there was a straightforwardness about her that spelled brains. There wasn't any coyness or fear in her voice, and she looked me straight in the eye. I liked her. She tossed her perky little hat on my desk and tapped a cigarette on the back of her hand.
I heard a murder in room 610 of the Parker Hotel at 2:30 this morning.
Well, this isn't the police station, Miss...
Farley. The police wouldn't be interested, Mr. Runyon.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because the body of the dead man is gone. The hotel doesn't think there was a murder. In fact, the night clerk says there wasn't anybody registered in room 610.
Well, what's your interest in the matter?
Well, what would you do if you heard somebody in the next room to yours murdered? Heard a door slam, heard running footsteps go down the hall, and when you looked through the keyhole, saw a dead man staring at you?
I'd either go back to sleep and see if I couldn't have a nicer dream, or I'd go downstairs and tell the hotel clerk.
It wasn't a dream, and I went down to see the clerk. He looked at the register, and there was nobody listed in room 610. We went upstairs. The room was empty.
Did it look as if it had been occupied?
No. That's why I came to you. Something very peculiar happened in that room last night, and I'm sure a man was killed.
You said you heard this murder. What do you mean? Did something wake you up?
No. I was in bed reading when I heard a knock on the door of the room next to mine. The door opened, I heard a man's voice say, "A thousand and one pardons, but have you the time?" Another man's voice answered, "But of course, the time is now."
Well, that doesn't make much sense. You're sure you heard that?
Yes. It sounded so strange that I continued listening closely. I heard footsteps in the room, and then there was a slight pause. Suddenly, the second voice said, "White." There was another pause, and the first man answered, "Black." And then I heard an exclamation of surprise or anger.
From black or white?
I couldn't tell. Almost immediately, I heard a soft popping noise as if someone had set off a very weak firecracker. Then I heard a groan of pain and the slam of a door. Footsteps ran down the hall quickly. By the time I opened my door, the hall was empty. You know the rest.
Did you get a good look at the man's face through the keyhole?
Yes. It was directly in front of the keyhole. He was sitting in a chair facing the door. His body had slumped back, but his head was hanging to one side. His eyes were wide open.
Light was on in the room?
Yes, but it was off when I came back with the clerk.
And there wasn't anything in the room that looked suspicious?
Nothing. What do you make of it, Mr. Runyon?
I think the hotel people are probably right. I think you had a very realistic nightmare.
I tell you, it wasn't a nightmare. I'm positive of it.
Why so positive?
Because this morning I stopped at the hotel desk and looked in the box of room 610. If that room had been unoccupied, there would have been a key there. The box was empty, Mr. Runyon.
I'd like to see the clerk who was on duty at the desk here last night. Where can I find him?
Well, I was on duty last night. What's wrong?
That's what I want you to tell me.
I don't understand.
Can we talk where it's a little more private?
Yes, I guess so. Just let me clear up.
I have a bit of a problem, and perhaps you can help me.
Oh, yes, sir. Just a second, please.
Okay.
What is it, sir?
I suppose you'll think I'm silly, but you see, I am a very light sleeper. The slightest noise awakens me, and I have great difficulty in getting back to sleep. Now, I'm a very busy man, and most certainly I need my rest.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
I am already registered here in the hotel. Walker is my name.
Oh, yes, sir.
My room is directly on the street, and it is quite noisy. I was wondering if I might not have another room. Perhaps one on the back near the corridor?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Room 610. I noticed it as I came out this morning. It seems to be in a position where it would be quieter than one of the others.
Room 610? Well, I don't know, sir. Just a second. I'm sorry, sir, but room 610 is reserved.
Reserved?
Yes, sir. I'm afraid there are no other vacancies on that floor. Perhaps in some other
floor. But perhaps I could have the room just for the afternoon. I really feel that I could rest there.
I'm sorry, sir, but that's quite out of the question.
I see. Well, thank you.
Sorry, sir.
A popular room, isn't it?
Beg your pardon, sir?
Room 610. Isn't that the room the young lady thought she heard a murder in last night?
Afraid I don't follow you.
Didn't you say you were on duty here last night?
That's right.
Were you the only clerk?
Of course.
Didn't a girl registered in room 608 come down about 2 o'clock this morning and tell you she'd heard a murder committed in room 610? The room next to hers? Didn't you both go back and find the room empty?
No. I don't understand. I didn't see any girl early this morning. And what's more, I didn't leave the desk all night.
I lit a cigarette and walked to the far end of the lobby where I could watch the clerk at the desk. 10 minutes passed. Then another clerk came on duty, and my boy said a few words to him and walked across the lobby to an empty elevator. The door shut. The hand on the dial swung slowly around to number 10 and stopped. There was another elevator standing open. I got in and rode up to the 6th floor. The corridor was empty. I took a pass key out of my pocket and walked slowly down past room 608 and stopped in front of 610. The pass key worked fine. I went into 610 and locked the door behind me. It was a typical second-rate hotel room, a double bed, a couple of chairs, a desk with some aged writing paper, and an unused Gideon Bible. A chest of drawers stood against one wall. Ill-fitting, faded wallpaper of an ancient hunting scene looked down on the room from all sides. I tried the dresser drawers first. 3 hairpins, a silk stocking with a run, and the stub of a theater ticket were all I found. The desk was empty, and there was nothing under the mattress or the ragged throw rug in the center of the floor. On top of the desk stood a glass bowl of artificial flowers. My elbow was resting on the desk, 6 inches from it, when a key slipped into the lock of the door. My arm jerked around and hit the bowl. The key went out of the lock and footsteps ran off down the hall. The corridor was empty when I opened the door. I closed it and locked it. Then I walked next door to 608.
Oh, come in, Mr. Runyon. Have you learned anything yet?
Maybe.
What?
How long have you been here in your room?
Oh, a couple of hours, I guess. Why?
Hear anything in the next room? The one where you thought you heard the murder last night?
Why, no. No, I haven't heard anything in there. Why? Did you think that...
I don't know. Something isn't adding up, sweetheart.
What do you mean?
I mean the night clerk told me he didn't see you last night. And he didn't come up here to the room next door.
What? But, well, that's ridiculous. Of course he did. He's lying.
Are you sure he's the one who's lying?
Of course. Wait a minute. You don't think that I'm lying?
Yeah, sweetheart.
But I'm not, I tell you. Why should I lie about that?
That's what I'd like to find out.
I don't understand. Why on earth would that clerk lie to you?
A little early in the day for martinis, isn't it?
What are you talking about?
This cocktail glass. You know, a cocktail glass with water on it makes a swell dictaphone if you press the glass against the wall, put your ear to the stem.
What do you mean?
I mean that you didn't accidentally hear anything in room 610 last night. If you did hear something, you were using this glass and you were listening. Why?
But I tell you
Look,
that...
Look, sweetheart. I just knocked a bowl of flowers over in that room and you didn't even hear that.
You were in just in room 610?
Yes. Somebody stuck a key in the door just before the flowers went over. It couldn't have been you, could it?
Why, no. What did you find in the room?
Nothing. What did you think I might find?
I don't...
Now, come clean. If you want my help, you've got to tell me the truth. What's it all about? Why were you listening against the wall last night?
I can't tell you that.
Okay, honey. It's been nice knowing you.
Oh, no, wait. Please, I need your help.
Well, then talk. And talk straight.
All right. I guess there isn't anything else for me to do. Promise me, though. Please give me your word that you'll keep secret what I'm going to tell you. It's very important. More important than you know.
Okay.
I'm a United States secret agent.
Can you prove it?
Oh, of course not. At least not here. Obviously, I can't carry identification. When I'm on a mission, I'm completely on my own. Funds are deposited in a certain bank for me, and I use them in any manner I see fit to achieve my end. This morning, I saw fit to hire you because I need help.
The peculiar occurrences in the next room are, of course, part of the job you're working on.
Of course.
A swell story.
It's a true one. Mr. Runyon, I really need your help. Won't you please believe me?
Maybe I'm a sap. Okay, I'll play it blind. What's the setup?
Well, the man who was murdered last night is an important foreign agent. He arrived from Europe yesterday and came to this hotel. I followed him and got this room next to his. Now, there's another agent of the same government already operating in this country, but we don't know who he is. Some time ago, we discovered that he had come into possession of a very valuable secret paper, a formula which our government alone had. The man in the next room was to contact this unknown agent and then return to Europe.
And your job was to stop him?
Yes. When the door opened last night and I heard the strange password, I thought, of course, that the unknown agent had arrived.
But it wasn't the right man.
No. Whoever entered that room last night was obviously trying to impersonate the real agent. When he failed to give the correct countersign to the second password, the man in the next room must have reached for a gun and the imposter was forced to kill him.
Have you any idea who the murderer might be?
Well, he's probably an agent for some other foreign power who had even more information than we did. At least he knew one of the passwords, which is more than I knew.
It's possible that the contact had already been made without your knowledge and the murdered man had the paper.
I don't see how the contact could have been made without my knowledge.
Well, that would have been easy. The secret paper could have been hidden in the room waiting for the man from Europe. I don't think that happened, though.
Why not?
Because I think I saw the murderer down in the lobby a little while ago. He said his name was Walker. He was anxious to rent room 610. He said he was registered in the hotel.
Then the paper must still be in the room.
I went over it pretty carefully and didn't find anything. That's why I don't think it was hidden there. I think the other agent, the one who was supposed to contact the man from Europe, still has it. I think he found the body and guessed what had happened. Maybe he didn't know whether the dead man was his agent or somebody his agent had killed. At any rate, he knew he had to get rid of the body.
But how? Where?
Now, listen to me.
Yes.
You stay here with your wine glass. Keep your ear on the next room.
Well, where are you going?
Down to the lobby. I want to find out which room this fellow Walker's registered in.
But the body. You said you knew it.
I said I think I know. It would be easy if the real agent happened to be the right person.
The right person? What do you mean?
I mean the night clerk.
Can I help you, sir?
Yeah. I'm looking for a fellow who works here as night clerk.
Mr. Evans.
Yeah, that's the fellow. Is he around here now?
Why, he went off duty a little while ago. He was on all night, so I imagine he's asleep in his room.
What room's he have?
He's in 1003.
Thanks.
Not at all, sir.
Oh, by the way, I believe there's an old friend of mine here in the hotel. His name is Walker. I wonder if you could tell me what room he's in, too.
Certainly, sir. Just a second. Walker, I don't seem to... Oh, yes. This must be your friend. Henry Walker?
Yeah, that's the one.
Well, I'm afraid you're too late, sir. Mr. Walker checked out of the hotel about half an hour ago.
Walker's gone. Checked out.
Gone? Then he did find the paper.
I don't think so.
Well, why would he leave then?
I think he was worried about the missing body. When he realized the murder hadn't been discovered, he came down and tried to rent the room where the body had been. Was told the room was vacant, but was reserved. What would you do in a case like that?
You mean he guessed that the night clerk must be the unknown agent?
Exactly. And he must have realized that the clerk would suspect him for trying to get the room. So he checked out and moved to a safer place. But I think he'll be back, either to see the clerk or to look that room over again.
Where's the clerk now?
He's asleep in his room. You hear anything next door?
No, nothing. But if the clerk is the other agent, we ought to...
He'll keep. Right now, I want to look the murder room over again. See if I can find the missing body.
That's the chair the dead man was sitting in when I looked through the keyhole.
Yeah, I know.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to try and figure something out. After you heard the muffled popping sound, which must have been a gun with a silencer, you heard the door slam. Then you heard running footsteps going away, right?
Yes. And by the time I opened my door, the corridor was empty. This door was locked. It was about 15 minutes later that the clerk and I came back up here.
So if the clerk happened to be on his way up here when you were going down, he could have passed you in the elevator.
Then he discovered the body.
Exactly. A dead man is hard to move. It didn't take the clerk long to hide the body, so it must be near here. Maybe the room across the hall. Let's take a look.
Nobody there. Somebody asleep in the bed.
Yeah. That's what the hotel maid probably thought, too. He's a smart boy, that clerk. Look.
Yes, that's the man. The man I followed from the airport. The man sitting in the chair.
Stiff as a poker. He was shot all right, right in the heart. Here, help me go through his pockets.
All right. Had a suitcase when he arrived. Not in the room.
The clerk probably got rid of it or took it to his own room. He could carry that where he couldn't carry a body. You see anything here that looks like your secret paper?
No. No, it's not here.
The clerk's probably got it or it's still hidden somewhere in the murder room.
What are you doing?
I'm going to cover this dead man up again. The chances are the body won't be discovered now for another 12 or more hours. I want you to go back to your room. Keep watching the room where this fellow was killed.
What are you going to do?
I think it's time I had a talk with the night clerk. I stopped in front of the clerk's room and listened. No sound came from inside. Nothing happened. I slipped my hand inside my coat, pulled my gun from the shoulder holster. Then I tried the door. It wasn't locked. The room was dark because the shades were pulled down, but it wasn't dark enough to hide the figure of a man sprawling grotesquely on the bed, his head hanging limply toward the floor. I groped for the light switch. It was Evans, the clerk. One of his hands clutched the rumpled sheet. The other was folded beneath him. A bright trail of blood slid down the side of the bed and formed a dark pool on the floor. I closed the door with my foot and looked round the room. Two suitcases lay on the floor, their contents beside them in a jumbled heap. Drawers had been emptied, pillows slashed, rugs pulled up, pictures pulled down. The killer hadn't missed a trick. From the completeness of the search, it was pretty obvious he hadn't found what he was looking for. I switched off the light, locked the door, and started running for the stairs at the end of the hall. There wasn't time to wait for the elevator. The gun was still in my hand when I opened the door of the girl's room on the sixth floor. She was gone. An overturned chair lay on the floor near the door, the broken cocktail glass beside it. Everything else looked in order. Slipping the safety on my gun, I turned once more toward the hall. Then I stopped. Something moved behind the closed door, the bathroom. I yanked it open and stepped back. The girl lay on her side on the floor, her hands and feet tied with stockings. A wash rag stuffed in her mouth served as a gag. Ah, just a second, I'll have these off. There we are.
Oh, we've got to stop him. He hasn't found the papers yet. Quick, I'll tie my hands.
Right, right. What happened?
Well, it was only a minute or two after you left. I was standing near the door, holding the glass against the wall, listening. Suddenly, I heard someone fumbling at the door of the room next door. I opened my door as quietly as possible to look out into the hall, but he must have heard me. He was standing right in front of me. Gun in his hand.
You didn't scream?
No. He hit me, and that's all I remember until just a second ago. I don't know how long I was unconscious.
It wasn't long. I wasn't gone more than 15 or 20 minutes.
But that's long enough. He hadn't found the paper, and that's why he came back. The clerk, what about him?
Dead. Just before I got there.
And the clerk didn't have it after all. It was hidden in the room next door. Walker's had time by now. He must have found it.
Don't be so sure. Unless Walker is smarter than I think he is, the formula is still there.
But where?
I don't know yet. But we're going to have another good look at that room.
He certainly went through everything.
Yeah. It was the same in the clerk's room.
But he must have found the formula. Why, there's no place else to look. He's even slashed the mattress open.
Yeah, he opened it twice. He went through the pillows twice, too. If he had found it, why go through the whole room twice?
Well, I see what you mean. Then you think it's still here?
I'm sure of it.
But there's nowhere else to look. It's impossible that a piece of paper with that much writing on it could still be hidden in here.
No, you're wrong.
I don't understand.
Well, look at it this way. The easiest way in the world to fool people is by what you might call misplaced attention.
Then you mean there isn't any paper in this room?
Exactly. I told you that clerk was smart. He knew if anyone searched for the formula, they'd naturally look for a piece of paper. That's what I mean by misdirected attention. The formula's here, all right, but it isn't on a hidden piece of paper in an envelope. That's why Walker and I didn't find it.
You mean it might be written on the ceiling or...
Nothing is true to that.
You know where it is?
I think so.
Well, where?
Look at the walls. Doesn't anything strike you as off-key?
The walls? You mean...
Sure. I mean the wallpaper. Here. Look here at this strip of paper behind the bed. Hmm? See this figure of a horse?
Yes.
The horse is split in two where the paper joins. The hind part is nearly an inch lower than the front part. Near the ceiling, the wall shows through. No paper hanger would be that careless.
Then there is a paper after all, and it's behind the wallpaper.
No, there isn't a paper behind there. That would show, make a bulge. Unless I miss my guess, the formula is written directly on the back of that strip of wallpaper.
Quick, let's see.
No, not so fast. It might tear. Here, I got a knife. There, look.
Yes, yes, it is. It's the formula. Quickly, let me have it.
Thank you, my friend.
Walker.
Oh, so you came back.
Put your hands over your heads quickly.
How did you get...
I'm better at opening doors quietly than you are, my dear. So you really were an agent. And I, like a stupid fool, thought you were merely the guest in the next room. I should have killed you then.
You've done too much killing already, Walker. Or whatever your real name is.
I have more to do, too. Very clever of you to find the formula. You would make an excellent man for this type of work.
I like my type better.
Keep your hands up high. Now turn around slowly, facing me. That's good. Now, you, fat man, drop the formula on the floor in front of you, but keep your hands high.
Okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Now I will just pick it up.
Now you will get what...
Yeah. Not fast enough, son.
You took an awful chance kicking him when he bent over. He might still have been able to shoot.
This life has made up of chances, sweetheart. Besides, I used to drop kick for my college football team.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
That shot. Somebody must have heard it. Quick, we've got to get out of here. Here, give me the phone.
Not so fast. I think I'll just hang on to this piece of wallpaper.
But you can't. Give it to me. I've got to return it. Don't you see? Please, quickly, before somebody comes.
I'd be a fool to give you this paper. How do I know who you really are? All I've got is your word that you're an American agent.
But I am, I tell you. I am.
Maybe. But I'm keeping the paper.
No, please. It's important. It's got to get back to Washington.
I still like your face, baby. It's nice and looks honest. There's a fire escape back there by the window. Somebody from the lobby will be here in a minute. I'll see that the formula gets to Washington and stays out of this business.
But these murders, these bodies...
Leave that to me. If you're on the level, you'll be okay. You can keep on working and nobody will ever know who you are. You're not on the level. Well, it's the chance I take for liking your face. Besides, you haven't killed anybody. I'll get going.
Well, all right. But please see that the formula gets to Washington. Now, here's an address. Just take it there. That's all. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand, sweetheart. Move.
Goodbye. And thank you.
Forget it, baby. Operator, get me Sergeant O'Hara at police headquarters, quick.
Sergeant O'Hara speaking.
Runyon, O'Hara. I'm in room 610 of the Parker Hotel with a dead man.
What, again?
He's a murderer. You'd better hurry, O'Hara. Just a second. Hurry, O'Hara, this is important. Maybe hard to explain. The others, too.
What others?
The other two dead bodies hidden here in the hotel.
What? You must be crazy. I can't help you get out of...
Yes, you can, O'Hara. You've got to. The fate of a nation is riding again.
Are you drunk? What's that mean?
It means that I've got to make a very important trip to Washington, O'Hara. A very, very important trip.
Next week at this time, the American Broadcasting Company brings you another adventure of Dashiell Hammett's exciting new character, the Fat Man. Next week's story is called The Dancing Tombstone. And the fat man says...
A ghost makes its rounds silently, and a corpse is quiet forever. But mystery screams in a graveyard when the silence is broken by the dancing tombstone.
Tonight's adventure of the Fat Man, played by J. Scott Smart, was produced by Charles Powers. Music is under the direction of Bernard Green. Sergeant O'Hara is played by Ed Begley. And this is Gene Kirby speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The Fat Man, on Tuned to Yesterday from the American Broadcasting Company, heard on September 9th, 1946. It was broadcast live on a Monday night at 9:30. And if you were a Chicago radio listener at that time in 1946 and tuning around the dial, you would have noticed that the Fat Man on WENR had a lot of competition with quiz shows like WIND's Ad Quiz or WCFL's Robert's Street Quiz or the nationally known and famous Dr. IQ, heard on the NBC affiliate WMAQ. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with the Burning Desire Matter, heard on CBS on the 27th of December, 1959.
Johnny Dollar.
Yeah?
What?
I said, yeah.
Oh, what's that supposed to mean, and who are you?
Oh, Johnny, this is Pat McCracken at Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Well, hi, Pat, but what's with the crazy dialogue?
Oh, that word, that yeah, was most of the conversation I got from some crazy character who just called in.
I'm afraid I don't dig you.
Oh, he called about 5 minutes ago. Said he'd been trying to reach you, but he got no answer.
I was out picking up a morning paper. Who was he, Pat?
He wouldn't say. He just gave his phone number.
Wait a minute. There's only one man in the world talks like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was the call from San Francisco?
No. No.
Oh.
Los Angeles.
Well, then maybe I was... because the man I was thinking of... Oh, wait a minute.
Yes, I'm waiting, John.
Tell me just one thing, Pat.
Well?
Have any of your insurance companies been having to pay off on any big fires lately? I mean, out in Los Angeles?
On any fires?
You'd better start checking with those companies out there.
Oh, wait a minute.
Do it, Pat. And I'll lay odds that you get a handful of arson reports.
Arson?
Yes.
Johnny, just because some silly guy calls up and all he says is, yeah.
Hey, let me have that phone number he gave you.
Oh, Johnny.
Come on, Pat. What is it?
Hollywood 8. 3142.
Okay, now you go ahead and check with your West Coast insurance
Johnny,
company. And get ready to pay my expense account to Los Angeles.
Are you kidding? Are you trying to tell me that the way some jerk says yeah means arson on the West Coast? Now, don't be silly.
You, want to bet?
Oh, John.
Pat, I'll call you back.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Burning Desire matter. Yeah, as I told Pat McCracken, there was only one person I knew whose conversation might consist mostly of that one word. So, expense account item 1250 for a phone call to Hollywood 83142. Hello? Hello?
Yeah?
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah?
Smokey Sullivan. Well? Smokey, this is Johnny Dollar.
Yeah?
Hey, you tried to call me here in Hartford. I was out. You called Universal Adjustment Bureau. I got the message. Here I am.
Yeah, Johnny.
Only what are you doing in L.A.? Last time I saw you was in San Francisco.
Got a job here, Johnny. Legit.
Hey, that's the stuff. Pays off, too, doesn't it?
Yeah. You're my friend, Johnny. You've done a lot for me. So, when I got a chance to help you...
Well, there's something doing out there, Smokey, that I ought to know about?
A bunch of fires, Johnny.
Arson, huh?
Yeah.
Is there insurance involved?
Why else anybody use a torch?
Yeah, you got a point there. But do you have any lead on whoever is behind the fires?
Yeah. So you better come out here, Johnny.
Okay, the first plane I can get. Where'll I find you?
322 South Equity Avenue.
South Equity. Okay, Smokey, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, I'll call to Pat McCracken, pack my bag, and... Johnny Dollar.
Oh, Johnny, thank goodness.
Pat?
Yes?
I was just about to pack up and...
Now, don't you ever get off that phone of yours?
I was talking to the guy
listen,
who told...
Listen to me. Johnny, you were right. Only reason that nobody smelled a rat is because a different insurance company was stuck with each of those fires out there. So until I called them to give me a report... Oh, and listen.
I'm listening, Pat.
According to the L.A. police, every one of them could have been arson.
Okay, I'll grab the first
seven of them in a row, Johnny, that we know about so far, I mean.
I haven't got the reports in yet from all the companies, and I'm also waiting for another report from the police. Now, Johnny, your best contact out
there. That I've already got.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean that character who called us up?
Yeah.
Look, will you please tell me, who is he? What does he know about this?
Universal Adjustment, putting the old expense account on this.
Yes, of course.
Then I'll give it all to you in the usual report. See ya.
Come on now, Johnny, listen.
Sorry, Pat, I gotta catch a plane. Expense account item 2, $162.85 plane ticket from Hartford to Los Angeles. Thanks to the time differential, it was only shortly after dark when the big mainliner set down at the L.A. International Airport. Item 3, $7.50 for a cab to Smokey's address. It was hardly Beverly Hills or Bel Air, believe me. 322 South Equity was in a beat-up part of a downtown industrial section. A weather-beaten three-story house with a sign out front that said, Boarders by the Week of Month.
Yeah, who are you?
Well, my name is...
Just what's a fancy dresser like you want around a place like this, huh? Well?
I'm looking for a man by the name of Smokey Sullivan. I understand he lives here.
That's right. Are you the man he said he was expecting?
That's right. My name is Johnny Dollar.
Well, he didn't tell me what the name was, but if you're sure he was expecting...
I'm sure. Now, where is his room?
Now, I don't know.
Where is his room, please?
Well, it's up on the second floor, just to the right after you get up the stairs.
Okay,
now,
thank you very much.
Well, now, maybe you better...
It's all right, I'll find it. Thanks a lot.
No, what I mean is, I thought you'd already come. I mean, what I mean is...
Smokey? Hey, Smokey, it's Johnny Dollar. Huh, what was that? Smokey! Now, what's all the... Oh, no. Smokey, can you hear me? Who did this? Are you... Good Lord. Smokey had really had it. Whoever had beaten him up probably would have killed him if I hadn't come along and scared him away. I looked out of the broken window, but of course was too late to see who'd done this. Meantime, the landlady appeared, and I had to get me some towels and a basin of cold water.
Here you are, Mr.
Oh, good. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Somebody sure laid into him, I'll say that. You ask me, it's a wonder if he stays alive.
He'll be all right. He'd better be.
You're lucky you come along to see him is all I got to say.
Yeah, you better get me a couple more towels and maybe another basin of water.
No, wait.
What?
You won't need him, mister. I got a much better idea. If I can find it.
Hey, Smokey.
You give me enough to find that bottle. Well, here it is. Yes, sir. This here will fix him up.
Smokey, can you hear me?
Fix him up quicker than a wink.
It's Johnny Dollar.
Here now, mister. You just pour a slug of this down his gullet and see if it don't bring him to.
Huh? Oh, yeah, good idea. Let me have that.
Oh, sure. Real genuine California cognac, it is.
And soak up another towel for me, will you, please?
I sure will, mister.
All right, here now, Smokey, here. See if you can get down some of this. Easy now, huh? That's it. Attaboy.
Really?
Yeah. A little more of this. Here.
You know, before you come up here, mister, I tried to tell
easy
you.
Easy now, Smokey.
Yeah, I tried to tell you. I thought that other man that come up here to see him was the one he was expecting. Here now, here's your fresh towel.
Thanks. Did you say other man?
That's right. Come in just before you did.
You know him, who he was?
The chimp.
What? What's Monkey?
The chimp, Johnny. That's who it was.
The chimp?
Yeah. Strong arm for Mickey Fortina.
Who's Mickey Fortina?
He's the one that...
Oh, now, look, Smokey, maybe you'd better wait until you feel better.
You and I could get a doctor.
No. Now, listen, Johnny.
Yeah?
Unless you stop him, there's going to be a lot more fires around here.
Fires? That's what he said.
Just don't worry about it, Miss... Mrs...
Miss Fletcher. Bertha Fletcher. That's my
Johnny,
name.
Johnny, listen.
Okay, Mrs. Fletcher. You go along. I'll take care of him.
Oh, well, now, I don't know. You sure I hadn't better get a doctor?
No. I'll take him to a hotel.
When his condition, I'll look after
him.
Now,
you go downstairs and give me a cab.
Well, I don't
oh,
know.
Oh, here.
I...
Here's a 10 spot for your trouble and this bottle of brandy.
Oh. Oh, well, thanks. You're a gent.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes, sir. Anything you say.
Johnny.
Yeah?
You got to listen to me.
Yeah, go ahead.
You had come up the stairs, scared him off. The chip might have killed me.
Well, he won't get to you again. I'm going to take you out of this place.
Somebody must have tipped off Mickey Fortina. Must have known I put in that call to you. So listen, Johnny.
Later, Smokey, after I get you out of here. Item 4, the $10 to Miss Fletcher. Item 5, a buck and a half for a cab to the Statler Hotel, where I had to show my credentials to the room clerk to get a bed for the somewhat mangled Smokey Sullivan. Item 6, $15 to the doctor who came up to the room, and I must admit, got him back in a pretty good shape. Then, when the doctor had left us...
Yeah, Johnny, all those fires, big insurance, all of them set.
7 of them in a row. So that means by one firebug,
no.
This Mickey Fortina you mentioned, huh?
No, Johnny, Mickey's too smart for that.
What?
All set by different guys. I don't know who they are, but I see no remains. And the police ain't sure, but I know there was arson.
Who's Mickey Fortina?
He's a go-between. I seen this happen before.
Yeah?
Frisco, Seattle, and Denver, a lot of places. He brings in a lot of boys of his own. Everyone got a different way of setting the blaze.
So the cops can't tie it up with any local boy whose methods they know.
Yeah.
Fortina's a go-between?
He makes the deal with whoever wants a fire.
And the police aren't on to him?
What for? He never set a fire himself.
Well, I know, but he's the guy that...
By the time the arson squad is in, the guy who done it is far away. So there's no witness can prove Fortina set up the deal.
And the police have never been able to put the squeeze on whoever made the deal for a fire?
And get sent up for it? For being accessory or whatever you call it?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. Fortina sent for me when he found out I was here in L.A. I used to know him, Johnny.
Wanted you to be a torch for him, huh?
Yeah, he just asked if I wanted to work for him. And he knew that I knew what he meant.
But if you knew that Fortina was operating here... Smokey.
How could I prove it? How can I prove it now?
Well, maybe I can.
But if he finds out I sent for you, Johnny...
It looks to me like he already has.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then. If somebody who wants a fire can get to Mickey Fortina, there must be some way I can.
At his office.
His what?
At his office every night. 1025 South Spring.
He has an office for a racket like this?
Why, you'd never know it. You'll see.
Yeah, I think I'd better see. Hey, Smokey, you... Who's that?
You got a gun, Johnny.
Right here and ready.
Open up in there. This is the police.
Police, huh? Right, it is the police.
The room clerk reported a man was brought in here who... Johnny!
Yeah, Pat Nichols.
Sergeant Nichols now, Johnny.
Good. How are you, boy?
Now, wait a minute. Is this the man you brought in here? Smokey Sullivan?
Listen, officer, I...
Johnny, you think maybe Smokey is tied in with this string of fires out here?
No, tell him, Johnny.
No, you tell him, Smokey, anything you want.
Well, now, look,
you know I'm no good at talking to a cop,
Yeah, well,
Johnny.
Give it a try. And, Pat, be sure you stick around to keep an eye on him.
What?
Smokey may need a bodyguard. You.
Huh?
Yeah. Until after I made a little business call.
Johnny.
Now, look, if you're out here because of those fires...
Did I say I was? I didn't tell him anything like that, did I, Smokey?
No, Johnny. And I see what you mean.
Now, listen,
just
you two.
Stick around, Pat. I'll see you later. If I had told Pat where I was going, he might have wanted to come along. And a man in the uniform would hardly have helped in the plan I had for trapping Mickey Fortina. But you know something? Going over to see him alone was a big mistake. One I almost didn't live to regret. My plan for trapping Mickey Fortina was a very simple one. I'd make like a property owner who was anxious to collect some fire insurance, who was willing to pay in advance to make sure my property went up in flames. Easy, or so I thought. Item 7, 85 cents per cab to the office building at 1025 South Spring. The only lights on were in Suite B on the second floor. According to the directory in the lobby, that was the office of the Fortina Friendly Loan Company. Loan office, huh?
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
Yeah, I'd like to see Mr. Fortina.
You got an appointment?
No, but I'd like to make a little deal with him.
Well, can I have your name, mister?
It's Morris, Theodore Morris.
Just a minute, huh? excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Man says his name is Morris, wants to see you, Mick.
Oh? Hey, listen, has the chimp come back yet?
No. And he said he was going to send Husky over there.
Husky? Why?
Well, Chimp said he was afraid if he showed up at that hotel...
Careful, careful what you say. Close the door.
Sure.
The chimp. And somebody was going over to the hotel. That could mean only for one thing, to get Smokey Sullivan. I carefully edged over closer to the door of Mickey's office, hoping I could hear more. It was too thick. And it suddenly dawned on me. If they knew I was the one who put Smokey in that hotel, they probably also knew why I'd come here. There was only one way to make sure. I'd have to go through, or at least try to go through, with a bluff I planned.
Oh, sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Morris, is it?
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Fortina, Ted Morris.
Oh, Mary, when he gets you, send him in.
Sure, Mick.
Come in, please. Sit down.
Yeah, surely. Thanks a lot. All right, I'll get right to the point, Mr. Fortina.
Oh, by all means do, Mr. Morris.
Well, I own a big shoe store over on North La Brea.
Yes?
Well, business has been pretty bad lately. I've been losing a lot of money, too. Too much stock on hand, big inventory and orders.
Well, if it's good merchandise, I see no reason why we can't arrange a loan for you.
Yeah, a loan?
Of course. What else?
Well, listen, I carry a lot of insurance on not only the stock, but the building, too.
Oh? How much, Mr. Morris?
Well, it adds up to over $185,000.
I see. It's very commendable. But why do you tell me about this insurance?
Well, I said I'd get to the point. Now, listen. If that place was to burn up some night, the whole works, I'd collect a lot of money on it, all the insurance.
And, of course, be in a position to repay whatever loan I advance to you.
All right. Stop beating around the bush, 14. I want that place burned out. Can you fix it?
Mr. Morris, if you want a loan, possibly even a sizable...
Well, you know what I want. Come on, how about it?
As I said, possibly we can advance it to you.
Now, look, I didn't come
However,
up here to...
However, as evidence of your good faith, your, shall we say, good intentions, are you prepared to make a down payment on such a loan, say, $10,000 cash? In advance?
What are you talking about? Set the fire, burn the place up so I can collect the insurance and I'll give you $15,000.
Now, just a minute. Who said anything about setting a fire?
I did. Well?
Who sent you here? If you said it was a former client, I won't believe
it. Oh, look, does it make any difference?
Do you by any chance know a man by the name of Smokey Sullivan?
Sullivan?
He knows him all right, Mick.
Well... The chimp?
Shut up. Sure, Mick, this is the guy I told you about. I come to see Smokey at his rooming house. What I left of him.
Very interesting.
After I ducked out, I hung around there. I seen him take Smokey in a cab. I followed him to that hotel.
You sent Husky over to take care of him?
Sure. And listen.
Yeah?
I don't know what name this guy gives you, but when he knocks on Smokey's door, he says it's Johnny Dollar.
Dollar? Insurance ticket.
Yeah, that's right, Mickey.
All right. So maybe I do arrange another fire with you in it, Dollar.
Mickey! There's a police car just put out in front!
Go ahead, Chip.
Yeah, I'll kill this dirty ass!
All right, now, Fortina, your turn.
Don't move, Dollar. Reach for a gun and I pull this trigger.
I see.
Yeah.
How are your eyes, Mickey? Can you see in the dark?
What?
Without this lamp in here? All right, Mickey! All right, you... Yeah.
Well, I guess Smokey was right at that, Johnny.
Hi, Pat.
He seemed to think you wouldn't need any help around here.
You're right, Johnny.
Yeah.
When that strong arm, that Husky Castellini, came up to the hotel room after him, well...
I had to tell him, Johnny. I had to tell him what it was all about.
Yeah, it's okay, Smokey. It's okay.
So we threw Husky in the clink and came over here.
Well, I got an admission out of him, Pat, but unless you can get these goons of his to talk, I don't know what you're going to hold him on.
After what just happened in here? Johnny, we'll hold him and his goons just as long as we need to. And unless they want to take the whole rap for him, I think they'll talk.
Yeah, they talked all right. And as a result, the police in a couple of nearby states should have no trouble at all in picking up some of the other of Fortina's boys, his hired torches.
Ah, funny, isn't it? These stupid jerks just never seem to learn. Expense account total, including hotel bill, plane ticket back to Hartford, and the sizable bit of folding money for Smokey Sullivan, $874.20. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's a word from our star about the case he handles on next week's program.
Thank you, Daniel. It's called the Hapless Ham Matter. And yeah, you guessed it. The ham turns out to be an actor. A really bad one with one of the cleverest methods of committing murder I've ever known. There's a lot of action and suspense in the story, and I think you'll like it. Who knows? Maybe if you listen closely, you'll be able to figure out his method even before I do. So join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Gene Tatum, Lawrence Dobkin, Vic Perrin, Paul Duboff, Don Diamond, and Frank Gerstle. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Cubberly speaking.
Intrigue breeds terror as suspense brings a shady moonlight sale next on the CBS Radio Network.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 27th, 1959 on CBS, bringing to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.